a saint, maybe might be nice.
Greetings, siblings, and welcome to episode 6 of Dear Uncle Tony. I'm your host, Kate Goodnight, Zai 2002. This month, we have our second full-length Get a Job interview featuring noble brother Adam DeLand, who works for Moorhead Capital in Raleigh, North Carolina. Many of you know Adam from his extensive work with the graduate chapter and Sank Board of Directors, but do you really know anything about his day job? If not, you're in luck because Adam has been on a very interesting path since graduating from UNC. I know you will enjoy hearing Adam discuss the twists and turns his career has taken and what exactly it is that he does as a key member of a small private investment firm. It's way more interesting than you'd think, I promise. Without further ado, episode 6.
How's it going?
Pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Do you want to just introduce yourself and tell us your name and your pledge class?
Sure. My name is Adam DeLand. I am Zai 2000.
Cool. And you are currently in Raleigh, right?
Yes. I live and work there.
So in the sort of a trademark question for this whole segment, in your own words, what do you do for a living?
So I work for an investment firm.
Cool. And what's it called?
It's called Moorhead Capital.
Awesome. So what do you do for Moorhead Capital in layman's terms?
I actually always struggle to describe exactly what I do. My job description is a little strange, but generally speaking, as a business, we look for other businesses to invest in. And when we find a deal that we might be doing, I'm involved in evaluating the deal, studying the company to see if it's something that we should be involved in, and helping to figure out what the valuation should be. Once we have actually done a deal, then I'm quite frequently involved as what you might call a consultant, seeing if there's ways that we can use our expertise and our network to help the business either grow or become more profitable.
Well, awesome. You are actually a great person to start out this interview thing with because, yeah, you are all about networking and that's what you do.
I do. I am personally not as directly involved as some other people in our business. I do some of that when I go to conferences, I meet with people and, you know, make some connections. I tend to meet with people, maybe you might say one rung down on the ladder, that are business development guys. I'm often out at conferences meeting CFOs or COOs, and in particular, I do a lot of technology stuff. So I'm meeting with CIOs or CTOs. So I get to know them, get to know their businesses, and occasionally that could lead to an introduction up to the owners of the business who are the ones who are kind of more empowered to do transactions of the kind that we would do.
Cool. So is there any particular type of business that you're looking for? Are you just kind of trying to find somebody who's got a really good model and a really good idea and has some momentum? Are you looking for sort of a particular field to work with?
A little bit of all of this. Well, actually, when I first started at Moorhead, we didn't make investments in private companies. We only made investments in public companies, which means companies that have stock that trades on the stock exchange. We just bought and sold stocks and bonds and options and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And we were at that time very focused on retail companies, largely clothing retail, but other kinds of retailers as well. Over time, we got more interested in what's called private equity, which is buying, you know, making investments in companies that do not trade publicly. And as we got into that, we started gravitating more towards restaurants and also technology. And we've kind of maintained that focus, but as we've made several restaurant investments, it gets harder for us to find a company that's not competitive with one of the companies that we're already invested in. And so in some ways, we're a tiny bit of a victim of our own success there. And so we've started to look further outside of the restaurant business to try to find other companies that we think could either be a good fit or just are good companies with a good business model that we like. Sometimes they're related to restaurants, other times they're not. So for instance, we're in the process of looking at a hydroponic lettuce grower.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a very cool business, and we like it. We think it's something that'll be growing in the future, no pun intended. And but we also are invested in a restaurant company that sells salads. And so there may be some good combination between owning those two businesses, but either one of them is great on their own. And our bias is towards businesses that have a long track record and management teams that have been there for a long time, because investing in brand new startup companies feels a little bit more like gambling than we're comfortable with. So
yeah,
we're actually trying to be a little bit more like Warren Buffett than, you know, some of the other kind of startup or venture capitalists.
Right. Yeah. Not just about making money hand over fist, but trying to do it a little bit more responsibly, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
And spread it out to folks who have actually demonstrated that they know what they're doing. I totally agree with that.
Totally. It's a very interesting industry because almost everybody in private equity has a very short-term view, where they'll buy a company and expect to sell it within a few years and make a big profit. Whereas when we buy a company, it's our full intention to own it forever. That's just hugely different than most people. And honestly, it can make it hard to buy a company because a lot of times the owners or the management team don't want to own it forever either. They just want to find somebody to give them money for a little while, and then in a few years,
right,
they sell it, make $1 billion or whatever. And so it can be a little tough for us, but it's a good criteria because it actually helps us avoid partnering with management teams that don't believe the same things that we do. So if we tell somebody, hey, we want to own this business forever, and they say, oh, you're not the guys for us, it's a really good way to not spend too much time.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Somebody not going to buy it. So.
Well, hey, so switching gears a little bit, having known you as an undergraduate myself, probably wasn't necessarily what you thought you were going to be doing by the time you hit your mid-30s. So why don't you tell us what you did while you were at Chapel Hill?
Yeah, so when I got to UNC, I had actually taken a couple of gap years after high school because I hadn't really figured out what I wanted to do when I grew up, if I did. But reached the conclusion that college was the way to get there, wherever there was, and that I did not want to work in a coffee shop for the rest of my life. So I came to school with...
Been there.
Yeah. So, you know, arrived at UNC with the determination to, number one, get a degree, but number two, figure out what I wanted to do. I passed through quite a few majors in my time, as do most people. I actually started as a biology major, but I guess after 1 year switched, and I was an English major for another year or so. But during that year, took, at the urging of another brother, Jorge Valdez, took the introduction to linguistics because it sounded cool. And it was very cool. It really captured my imagination and interests, and it seemed like a great bridge between the science part of my brain that biology had appealed to and the humanities part that English had appealed to, that it kind of bridged the gap. Studying the science of language was kind of a great compromise and just perfect for me. So studied that, really threw myself into it, and, you know, changed my major to it. Really had planned to go into academics because there's not a lot else you can do with a linguistics degree, or at least couldn't at the time. Nowadays, there's a lot more research going into natural language processing and, you know, text-to-speech and things like that. But at the time, that wasn't quite as big. So academics was my plan, but kind of as I spent more time with my professors and began to understand a lot more about what the life or the career path in academics looks like, you know, the struggle for tenure and
the
pressure to publish. Yeah, it just, I just couldn't really see myself doing that. It seems just a much more political job in a lot of ways, because, you know, if you're working for a public institution, you're in some ways tied to the budget of the state that you're in, et cetera. And so ultimately did not decide to go to grad school for linguistics. Unfortunately, I didn't really have a backup plan at the time. And I graduated without a place to go to, but I had been working all the way through school. I continued to work in coffee shops, and by my senior year was actually working at Whole Foods. Again, I had been kind of introduced to it by another brother at Hall, Bill Ryan Hazen. He said, hey, this is a great gig. You should come work. And so I did, and liked it. I'd always been interested in cooking, and so I started out in the meat department and got a lot more exposure to kind of the culinary world, which was really starting to become the juggernaut that it is today with the Food Network and the chef shows and so on. And really liked that and found Whole Foods to not be that awful of a place to work, like being a giant corporation. And so graduating without a backup plan, essentially decided to do the best that I could at Whole Foods until I came up with something else. So pretty quickly after that, I was able to get a promotion to be the coffee buyer for the store in Chapel Hill and got, you know, a raise, a little more responsibility. And that was very exciting to me. And I wanted to see what else I could do. But unfortunately, there wasn't much further I could go in Chapel Hill, but people above that level just tended to stay in the job. I was pretty young, was looking around and figured out that New York was a place that they were rapidly building stores and there was a lot more opportunity. I had a bunch of friends who lived up there who were encouraging me to move. And so I made the leap. I just decided to move to New York no matter what, and was lucky enough to actually arrive in New York with a promotion from Whole Foods and was working in a store there. At the time, was the busiest store in the company, a lot of opportunity. I had a really interesting experience there in a kind of an odd department, and I actually spent a lot of my time working on a computer trying to figure out why our department wasn't making any money, and eventually did do that. Was able to suggest a few small changes to the menu for the smoothie bar. He accepted those changes.
Yeah, those can be super expensive.
Oh, man. And was able to get just with a couple of small changes, suddenly get our department into profitability, which from the day the store had opened, we had been losing money. And that was really exciting to me. And I had, my store leader was very proud of me and I had a bright future at Whole Foods. But that whole experience had actually gotten me very excited about just working with numbers and the career path in Whole Foods, as with all retail jobs, for a long time still involves working with people. And, they make a lot less sense, the numbers I had discovered. So a friend of mine who I lived with in New York at the time had seen all of the stuff I was doing and was really impressed with the kind of quantitative work I'd done. And he said, hey, you're really good at that. You seem to really like it. I'm about to move back to North Carolina and start a financial firm. Would you be interested in coming to work with me on that? And that is ultimately what I decided to do. I, you know, had a great experience at Whole Foods, but didn't necessarily want to keep working in the stores for the next 10 years until I could finally get out to senior management or something like that in the regional offices. So decided to come back home to North Carolina and started working at what eventually came to be named Morehead Capital. That was 9 years ago. So we're never left. I thought it might be a 6 month gig until I found out what I really wanted to do or went back to school. I actually contemplated going to law school, even went so far as to take the LSAT. That was an experience. But
I think it changes you.
It sure does.
It's like indelible marks.
That's right. I sure learned that lawyering was maybe not going to be quite as much fun as it seems like it is on TV. Ultimately, you know, kind of going through a lot of options, nothing ever seemed as exciting to me as the things that we were doing at Morehead. And so, as I said earlier, we started doing public investments and then kind of switched over to private and started out as employee number one of this new, at the time, hedge fund and now a partner in what's now a private equity fund. And it's been a wild ride and continues to be, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
As you were saying, it's, if you met me 15 years ago, it would not have been something you would have ever guessed could have happened. But
no, but hey, then again, who knew where anybody was going to be then or was really even thinking about it that much?
Exactly. So, you know, there was certainly a large role of luck in where I ended up, you know, kind of just the right place at the right time at several points in my life and fortunate enough to know somebody who saw what I was doing and saw the potential that at the time I didn't even realize. So I'll be the first to admit that that was all there. But I think mostly what I would attribute it to is when I found the right place, and this was true at Whole Foods and at Morehead, the things I was doing were so intrinsically interesting to me that I went way above and beyond the, you know, job description that I'd been given and really went to work solving problems that were interesting to me. And I was just lucky that the jobs I had presented interesting problems that I just worked way harder than was probably reasonable, but kind of came through the other side with a lot more responsibility and respect of the people I worked with. And so that's kind of the biggest lesson I've learned is if you're doing something that you like, you'll never work a day in your life. It's all fun.
Aw, Adam. So you're really good at telling your story. So you've actually been a joy to interview, and I feel a little auxiliary, but hey, no, that's a good thing. It sounds awesome, actually, what you get to do, and that, yeah, you actually do get to end up doing what you want to do and what you like doing every day, but there's got to be some downside. So what's the worst part of your job? Like, what's the least exciting thing to you about doing what you're doing? Maybe not even what you're doing, but the least exciting part of your field.
So that's an interesting question. As there are, as you're saying, there's downsides to every job and industry. For my own, there's a couple. I think probably the first one that I feel affects me most personally is when people ask me what I do, I struggle to figure out exactly what to say. I've settled on saying I work for an investment firm because over the time I've worked in this industry, hedge funds and private equity funds, which both could describe what I do, have gotten a terrible name, a justifiably terrible name in the media because of a lot of the things that they did that contributed to the financial crisis. And so honestly, I'm often embarrassed to say, oh, I work for a private equity firm. That's a little rough. Most of my personal friends don't work in the same industry, and I kind of almost feel like I have to explain or justify what I do. And, you know, and I'll say things like, oh, no, don't worry, I'm one of the good guys or something like that. So it can be tough to work in an industry that is often rightfully vilified. Though, of course, I do feel like I'm one of the good guys. So that's one tough thing. Another is that a lot of the people in the industry are not really pleasant people. That's tied to the first one, but it's an industry, you know, financial services as an industry is one that people are often highly compensated, and that attracts a certain kind of mentality.
Yeah, definitely.
That doesn't necessarily have what I would consider positive personality traits. That is the nicest way I can say that.
No, I totally hear you. I was going to ask you, like, yeah, how the culture of that is. Do you seem to really like where you are? Did you feel like that's unique in the field?
I do. The people I work with are amazingly smart and hardworking and of far better moral character than a lot of the people that we encounter across the table sometimes. So I love where I work. We do have what has been referred to as a frat house atmosphere in the office. But
that sounds great for any graduating CNAs. You can talk to Adam DeLand if you just want to continue that experience.
That's right.
but card player.
But I think that our office has far less of the negative elements of what you think of as a frat house. We don't tease or anything like that. We might just swear a little more than is typical in a professional culture, but we're operate out of fundamental respect for each other and for people that we're planning to partner with. When you're investing in a business, millions or, you know, often tens of millions of dollars, you go into it very carefully and consideredly. A lot of times people use the metaphor of marriage to talk about these business deals, and that's really how we approach it, is we really want to get to know the people and understand them as people and not just as a business that X dollars and Y cents are going into or coming out of. I do enjoy that aspect, but not everybody in the industry approaches it that way. And that can make it tough for us to deal with those people. So that is kind of one downside. I like to think of us as a force for change in the industry and, you know, trying to push it in one direction, but we're certainly not a giant and aren't able to exercise our power to sway the larger industry. But there are definitely places or times that we've found ourselves having the opportunity to invest in the company because of specifically our approach to getting to know people rather than just hard-nosed negotiation.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's a good place to be. And I think the last thing I would say about my job is less about the industry, more specifically about what we do. In private equity, we invest in businesses and will typically own a majority of the businesses that we invest in. Unfortunately, that means that we have to exercise oversight on the management team, which often include the founders of the business. And if the businesses aren't performing well or we question the judgment of the management, sometimes we're in the position of having to change the management team of companies, which again are often the founders. And
gotcha. So you're kind of operating sort of as the board and the like looking at the executive director.
Yeah. And it's a deeply uncomfortable place, particularly because we've always invested so much time in getting to know those people and making sure that we're aligned. Occasionally we've been mistaken about how much we agreed, or we've been mistaken about how capable they were of dealing with a certain rate of growth. And it just puts us in a very tough situation that we have obligations to our own investors to manage the funds that they've entrusted us with. And that means we have to make sure that these companies are run well and according to the philosophy that our investors expect. And when that's not happening, we have to work out how to either change the people to make that happen or find somebody else.
And I can imagine that could be a kind of a drawn out process at times too, because you're dealing with people's livelihoods and people that obviously you do know and care about and have invested in, giving them the opportunity to say, hey, okay, this is what we've noticed, this is what you've established, but we need a little bit more from you. You know, we're losing money too here, man. We're here with you.
Right. Anyone who owns a business, small or large, can sympathize with this, that there's an employee that you have to fire. It's always an agonizing choice. For us, it's amplified a tiny bit by the fact that we didn't create these businesses, right? They are always ones that we found and invested after they had already been built to a certain size. And it can be very awkward in many, many ways for us to have to change management. And it is really the hardest thing we do and doesn't always turn out well. Then probably the single most intensive learning experience I've had throughout my career, exactly that part of it, that deals can go well or go poorly and many deals fall through before you close them, et cetera. And that's always tough, kind of an emotional roller coaster, but I'm pretty good at staying level through that. But when people that I've been with repeatedly have met their wives and their kids, and that we have to come in and tell them that we're going to remove them from the business that they started, nothing makes that easy. Not an experience I would recommend for anybody, but it certainly does teach you a lot about how you interact with people, and it kind of makes you face up to some realities in the world.
Yeah, well, definitely. Oh, man. Well, you've taken – actually, actually kind of a pretty logical path to where you've gotten, considering what all you've done, studying the science of language and communicating with people, working in Whole Foods, working with management, working with a company that did a lot to establish itself as a responsible company, and then, yeah, wanting to invest in their employees, things like that. So it actually seems is a lot more straightforward when you look at it. But if somebody's looking into doing this, is there any particular advice that you have or anything that you really think that somebody that's looking into, especially this type of investment firm where you're not necessarily in it for the quick fix, you're not just going to business school and then moving to Wall Street for 2 years until you burn out, but that long-term thing, if you're looking for a career, what folks need and what they should be getting if they're wanting to go forward with this?
That's a great question. One thing I have learned is that there is no singular path. There are some good things to do, but as an example of the things that some of my partners at work studied, our CFO has a degree in philosophy from UNC, and nice. The president of our firm, his undergraduate degree is in comparative religion. So neither...
Is that Quentin?
Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, and
that's awesome.
So there's no single right path to do it. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't say that your undergraduate degree doesn't matter. I think it is important that you study something that you care about, but it is not determinative. Just because you didn't get a degree in business or economics doesn't mean that you couldn't go into the finance industry. It may be a little harder. You may take a more atypical path like my own, which in retrospect, when looking back on it, does seem fairly logical. At the time, it was not quite as smooth of a ride.
So I'm the dream here too, buddy.
So I think that the most important thing is knowing, having a good idea of what kind of work you would want to do, especially for Morehead. We started investing primarily in public companies and then moving to private companies. They're vastly different worlds. And while some of the base skills are in common, you have to know how to use Excel for both of those. The other skills are very different. So having an idea of what you would like to do, broadly speaking, I think is very important, whether it is something like we do, where we would partner with a company and be invested for the very long term. And that model entails a much slower rate of deals. And a lot of people in finance are very addicted to deals where they want one deal after another. So if that's really what gets you excited, then working in private equity or being an investment banker where you're actually solely there for the transaction rather than for what comes before or after. A lot of people get into finance, they start as an investment banker, but eventually decide they want to run a company. So once you have an idea of what you want to do, if you get a degree in business or economics or marketing or whatever, that probably helps a little bit. But the most important thing is just finding the people in your area, in your own personal network, and in the alumni network, whether it be the hall or the school. UNC, just like every other school that we have chapters at, are all very interested in connecting, you know, recent graduates with alumni in their field. And there are databases that you can search through to find people. And I've had a number of people who have graduated from UNC reach out to me and say, hey, I see that you are a graduate of UNC and you work for Morehead, which I understand is a private equity firm. Could I come talk to you? You can just do the work and go find these people. You have to be prepared to hear no a lot.
Right. I think that's anything really too. Learning that lesson early on is a good thing as well.
Exactly. But you'll be surprised at how many people will say, oh, you went to UNC? Sure. You know, come on by. We'll take the time. And maybe nothing comes of it, but maybe something does. And so I think just perseverance is very important. Sure, it helps if you know somebody, or your uncle's buddy works for Goldman or did in the day or something like that. That's always great. And work that if you can. But you don't have to have that to get a job. You really just need your foot in the door. And then after that, it's all up to you, proving that you're able to do the job. If you know it's something you want to do, then you'll be able to figure out all the stuff. I know finance in particular can seem very arcane and potentially even boring, but most of the concepts really aren't that hard. The hardest part is just, you know, fitting in with the culture, or at least not actively working against it. It's kind of unfortunate, but I think it's true in any field. You just have to go with that. There's a what's called the mushroom method, and it is how you train young analysts, which is keep them in the dark and feed them a bunch of shit.
Nice.
And that is kind of unfortunately the way of it. It's sort of like hazing, but once you get through that, you do learn a tremendous amount in that period, and then it's just applying that, you know, finding a mentor and kind of running with it. There's very little stigma in the business or in the industry of moving from firm to firm. It's sort of expected. Just this week, we had one of our analysts leave. He'd been with us for 2 years, but he left with no hard feelings, and we didn't mistreat him. But he could look ahead at the things that we were doing, and he was interested in a higher volume of deals than we were doing. And so he left to go work for an investment bank in New York that is doing more deals. And it was totally amicable, and he's probably going to call us with deals to do in the future.
Yeah,
because he just saw that his path with us wasn't going to take him where he wanted, and we totally understood that. And we can't promise that we're always going to be a perfect place for everybody. And so it's certainly possible to move around, and many people find the thing they want to do, even if it ends up being outside finance. A lot of people will work on a deal with a company, perhaps a lettuce grower, and then they figure out they have a real passion for growing lettuce and will leave the finance firm to go work for the operating company and grow lettuce. So I think it's a good industry for that, but it gives you exposure to a lot of businesses. It helps you see a lot of what goes on in the world that may not be visible day to day, and kind of helps you find the places that you might fit in. Certainly committed to Moorhead, but I think about time to time, like, hey, maybe I would go, you know, work and run a restaurant company because I know a lot about financing restaurant companies and working with point of sale data and so on. I think it provides a lot of those opportunities as well. So it's a good field, but there is all of the downsides I was mentioning earlier are there. They're real trade-offs that you have to work through. And as I said, I'm lucky enough to be in an office where a lot of the cultural things are not a problem for me within the office, but there's still challenges when I work with another firm across the table.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily exactly where I want to be, and I'm looking forward and looking for other opportunities. But yeah, one of the things I have learned from all of the experiences, good and bad, I've had is that no matter what you're doing, if you, A, like your coworkers, it's going to be a hell of a lot better. And also, it doesn't matter really what it is that you're doing, as long as you find it personally interesting and personally fulfilling, it's going to benefit you in some way or another, whether it is finding another arm of a network through that pursuit and saying, hey, I got exposure to, you know, something that I completely never thought about for myself, but I've somehow managed to learn a lot about it and have established that interest. And yeah, I'm going to try something new. So I would definitely test the waters.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I just have one last question. Is there anything that you wished that I had asked that we didn't cover? You feel like it's essential knowledge.
Oh, that's a great question. I guess this is related to the last question, you know, what advice would I have for somebody? But if you asked me what I would have done differently earlier if I had decided to go into this just personally, I probably would have actually gone to grad school and studied data science.
Okay.
Which a lot of times is under a library or information science, but specifically what nowadays is being called big data and statistical analysis or machine learning, all of these terms that are out there. In some ways, on a very small scale, that's what I do, and it's the part of my job that I like the most. And I probably would have studied that and kind of found a way into finance doing that, because that's a very in-demand skill nowadays and is very interesting. And kind of in my career, I've sort of made up a lot of techniques that are, you know, very small echoes of the big data techniques. And if I had one thing that I wished I could really take the time to sit down and learn, it would be that, because it's applicable to so many places, so many different fields. A, it would give me a lot of options and places to go if I wanted to, but B, it just is a new tool that just previously didn't exist with the advent of the internet and cloud technologies and so on, it's a real change in the world. And a lot of businesses are not really prepared for that change, and they're looking for people to do it. And so without actually changing the field that I'm in or the stuff that I'm doing, I wish that I had studied that. Certainly don't regret my linguistics degree. I cherish that knowledge. But if I had one practical skill that I wish I had studied, it would have been that one.
Nice. I think that's an excellent way to round off. But yeah, God, thank you so much for responding, first of all, to my email, because you are one of two that have so far. And thank you so much for your time. I've certainly enjoyed this, and I don't even use this word lightly. You were a joy to interview.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. It was fun. It is a joy to be interviewed by you.
Well, thanks, Adam. Well, yeah. Well, have a great weekend. I hope you get one, and yep. I will talk to you soon.
Okay. Sounds great.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Dear Uncle Tony. Special thanks to Brother Michael Williams, Sister KJ Garner, and of course to Adam for taking the time to do this interview. The interlude music you heard on the podcast is Ode to St. Anthony by Sister Charlotte Parrott. Dear Uncle Tony is a production of the Siblings of St. Anthony Hall's Zai Chapter, presented by the St. Anthony Association of North Carolina. The podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. If you'd like to contribute content to the show, you can contact us at submissions@DearUncleTony.com, or you can leave us a greeting on our Google Voice line at 919-709-3327. That's 919-709-DEAR. You can always support the podcast and the Zai Chapter with a secure online donation at www.stanthonync.org/donate. Thanks again for listening. Respectfully submitted.